5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Yahoo Sports Radio 1560.
Davis tries to grip, and it's in!
KGOW Bel Air Houston, a Gal Media radio station. Weird out, just weird out. You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM. Bud Light again reminds you to get down to BBVA Compass Stadium Saturday. The Vancouver Whitecaps in town to take on the Houston Dynamo Vancouver. One of the great stories of the year, Bud Light says. Get over to HoustonDynamo.com. Get your tickets there. That's where you can catch the Dynamo and Vancouver, the Dynamo and Giles Barnes against the Vancouver Whitecaps. Bud Light reminds you, get into the stadium, check out the Houston Dynamo and Vancouver. And they also remind you to get over to BBVACompassStadium.com, get your tickets for Argentina and Bolivia. We welcome in the one and only Giles Barnes. Giles, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Anytime, Glenn, anytime.
All right, real quick hit here on Argentina, because you played against them in the Copa America. Just talk about the experience of playing against this unbelievable soccer-playing nation, and then maybe tie it into the fact that we're going to get an opportunity to see them here in Houston, Texas.
Yeah, I think it's going to be incredible for everyone, you know, to come down to BBVA Compass and watch the likes of, you know, Lionel Messi, Angel Di Maria, Sergio Aguero. It's something, you know, dreams are made of. And fortunately, as you said, I got to play against them in the Copa America, you know. You get up close and personal and you kind of realize how good these people actually are. You know, it was an honor to be on the same pitch as the likes of Lionel Messi. So, you know, for the fans and everyone that come down to the stadium, I'm sure they'll have a great night.
Yeah, so when you go on that field and you see a team that has such an identifiable playing style as Argentina, what were the things that jumped out at you?
Yeah, they didn't really give away the ball, to be honest with you. You know, they had movement everywhere, their fluidity throughout the, you know, in the centre-back pushing on, their rotation was just incredible. You know, I think a lot of people don't realise they're not just technically gifted players, they actually really work their socks off as well. And that was one of the things that really did surprise me, to see the likes of Messi and Di Maria really working hard off the ball. You know, Higuain was incredible on the day as well. Not just for his hold-up play and, you know, his hunger with the ball, but his actual work rate off the ball as well, which was just incredible.
Giles, that was a great result for you in Jamaica, though, and that's something that you guys really could hang your hat on heading into the Gold Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, you know. Obviously, it was a loss. But, you know, we thought as a team collectively we did really well. And then, obviously, we knew that we were going into the Gold Cup, so it was it was good to kind of, you know, test the world against some of the best in the world, knowing that you're going into another international tournament of great prestige, where you could actually do something really well as well.
He's Giles Barnes. He's on Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. This is Dynamo All Access. Giles, obviously, you didn't play against Portland. You're coming back now. Talk to me a little bit about getting rejuvenated here, because you've really pushed the body to the limit here with travel and games and matches and now got to help the Dynamo in this stretch run here for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's been a tough few months for me, to be honest, you know, physically and mentally. I've been struggling with Achilles tendonitis for probably over 6-7 weeks now. And, you know, like I had it throughout the tournament also just before I went to actually Copa America, so it could even be longer than that. And, you know, with all the surface changes and the travel and, you know, game after game, you know, I played almost, I think, 9-10 games for Jamaica in such a short turnover, came back, played for Houston. You know, and then played on the turf the other day, which really didn't help it at all. So it kind of caught up with me, you know, me and Owen spoke. We pushed it to the wire, to be honest with you, to see if I was fit to play against Portland. But we decided, you know, and fair play to Owen and the medical staff for actually thinking about the benefit of me as an individual that maybe to sit out and try and rest it to give myself an opportunity and a chance to be able to play on Wednesday.
Yeah, so you brought up in a very big piece here is the mental side of it. How does the mental side of it get rejuvenated? We understand trainers on the physical side, but the mental side of it is equally as important, and sometimes the two of them mesh. So how do you rejuvenate the mental side of it?
If you know anyone that knows me, they know how much I love the game. So mentally, it wasn't too bad. It was more of the tiredness. Everyone knows I'll never, ever want to miss a game or a minute of football. After coming off the back-to-back of two tournaments, it was just kind of getting my mind ready, trying to overcome the tiredness and the strain, you know, that your body is telling your mind that it has. You need to overcome those kind of things. And, you know, as I said, Owen and the staff have been brilliant with me, you know. A few extra days off, pool regeneration, that kind of thing, to try and make myself feel a little bit fresher in those kind of terms, you know. And that always gives the mind a lift as well also.
So when you look down at the Portland game, this was a good effort on the road here for the Dynamo. Talk a little bit about your teammates and their battling spirit on this night in a very tough environment.
It was. I don't know if we actually got the credit we deserved for that game, actually. Obviously, I was there on the bench watching. Portland are a good side. Obviously, they're playing on turf also. We had some key players missing, and I think the players who weren't in their place stepped up as well. I know obviously we were two goals ahead, and you know, to come back and tie 2-2 is it's a flip of a coin. But to go away, you know, if you just said, yeah, we could grab a point at Portland and keep our good form going, people would have taken it as a point. So, you know, you look at it as a bit of an upsetting way to tie the game because it was two goals up. But at the end of the day, we've gone to a really hard place. We've got great players, you know, they're blessed with a lot of great players, a great fan base, and we've got a point, so it keeps the momentum going.
Let's switch gears to the Vancouver Whitecaps, who ahead of this weekend, and of course, they are one of the top teams in the Western Conference. Your teammate on the Jamaican national team, Darren Maddox, there sort of symbolizes a very youthful team, a very athletic team. Speak a little bit about the Vancouver Whitecaps and the challenge they pose on Saturday.
Yep, they're a very youthful team. You know, they're full of exuberance, they're athletic, they like to get the ball down and play. They've got a manager who believes in young attacking players. And he wants to get them on the ball and make teams work, you know. And Robbo's a good guy as well. I've known him for a while. So he knows how to play the game. He encourages his players to take chances and take risks. So they're playing with a feet, and you can tell right now. But we're confident that they'll be upset on the weekend.
Giles, as always, we thank you very much for taking the time out, being so open and coming on the radio with us. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Glenn.
Good to hear from Giles Barnes, as always. Now let's go to Eric Kubo-Torres, who does an interview with me. Again, this was earlier in the week after Dynamo training.
Eric, just how about a little talk on how things have been here since you arrived in Houston.
¿Cómo me he sentido estos días en
Houston? Desde que
llegaste. I feel good. I need work more. I training every day for more confidence, for more confidence and more comfortable in the city, in the field. I feel very good, and I need to adapt more in the city and in the field and the humid.
How do you like being under an English manager for the first time in your career? Técnico de Inglaterra.
Yes. It's a very good coach. I learning every day. A lot. It's very important for me for listen, for learning in the field. When we try the finish, to the field, or the keeper is good for me, and I need learning every day more.
Do you like? Are you excited about getting your first start eventually and your first MLS goal for Houston Dynamo?
Yes, I want to score. I want to celebrate in my stadium with my people. Yeah, I feel good. Every day I feel better and better. And I need to work a little bit more. And when I have my 100%, the coach start. But I feel good for start or play the 45 minutes, 60 minutes. It's good for me, no?
What type of striker would you describe yourself as?
¿Qué? Gracias. ¿Qué tipo de delantero tú te describes a ti mismo?
Híjole, está difícil. I think I am a central forward. I need to stay in the box. I know need go to outside to the box. I need play to 1-2 touches and go to the box, and I know I need only this, no, only one touch and go to the box, hold the ball, and play easy. And my work is to score goals, but I need training for this now.
He's Eric Hubo Torres, the Houston Dynamo, joining us here. Biggest influence in Mexico. Who is your biggest influence? Técnico, otro jugador?
Tu mayor influencia en el fútbol mexicano.
Bueno, it's one person would help me every day, and I talking to the weeks or for the message is Adolfo Bautista. He's a very good person. He's a good professional, intelligent, and I am agradecido.
Thankful.
I am thankful with this person, and I don't know, maybe another person is Rafa Márquez Lugo. No play more, but he's a very good person. Only this, no.
Excellent. Last question, and then we'll let you go, Kubo, and thank you very much for your time. How much pressure do you feel, you know, coming to Houston, because there is so much expectation from fans and everybody around for you to sort of bring the Mexican soccer fan to MLS?
¿Qué esperan los aficionados?
Bueno, ¿cuánta presión tú sientes por las expectativas que hay en
ti? No, I don't feel pressure. I feel responsibility, and I know I need work for this pressure, for this expectative to they have to me. But I feel good, no? I know when I score one goal, it's more easy for me, it's more comfortable, it's no this pressure. But I feel good. I feel very good. I work every day for play more. It's difficult when you come in the middle to the season. It's for the adaptation, for the you need now the new coach, the new friends in the locker room. But it's good. I need work. I feel good. I need work more, and only this, no?
Kubo, gracias. Thank you very much for your time. Okay. Muy excelente su inglés.
No, I need to remember, but thank you. Thank you for helping me.
Thank you. My thanks to both Giles Barnes and Eric Kubo Torres. And coming up next, we're going to switch to the women's game in the Houston Dash Canadian International. Lauren Sesselman on all things Dash, Sesselman, and Canadian National Team.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Dynamo All Access. I'm Glenn Davis here on Yahoo Sports Radio 1560 AM. Each and every week, we thank you for tuning in. Again, tickets for the Dynamo and Dash at HoustonDynamo.com. Also, you can get tickets for Argentina-Bolivia at BBVA Compass Stadium. Now, our interview with Canadian International and Houston Dash defender, Lauren Sesselman. Lauren, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's first talk about what has been an interesting year for you, a World Cup year, an NWSL year, but I'm down here watching you training, race for time to get ready for the Canadian national team coming off injury. You get through the World Cup, you get injured again here with a meniscus problem. It's been a tough, frustrating injury year for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really frustrating, but my ultimate goal was playing the World Cup, and I felt fit, I felt strong, like, going into it, and I did well, and I'm very proud of myself, and it was just unfortunate that I came back to the NWSL, and I was ready to fight and have a good rest of the season, and unfortunately, the second weekend, I tore my meniscus and had a little bit of a bone bruise. So luckily it wasn't anything serious, and I think anytime you're coming back from a serious injury like an ACL, little things happen here and there. It takes usually about 2 full years to be, like, you know, fully ready. So, you know, it's just unfortunate, but what can you do? And I'm just glad it wasn't anything serious.
Let me take you back to Canada, because Canada were wonderful hosts for this Women's World Cup. You guys had intense pressure on you. I mean, when I get into Vancouver, I get off the plane, the first thing I see is a giant picture of all the players on the front page of the newspaper. There was scrutiny. There was healthy criticism. There was unfair criticism. But the fact is, you guys had unbelievable attention in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was absolutely phenomenal to see that. I mean, having our country and everybody behind us was a great feeling. And, you know, it was such a surreal dream just to be there and be a part of the team. And just to host a World Cup, I think, is pretty sweet. And, you know, we had a lot of people rally around us. But, you know, when you're the host, you know, comes a lot of scrutiny and criticism. And that's just something that comes along with it. And being a professional athlete, and I can handle the criticism. I just can't handle other things. So.
What's the takeaway from this for Canadian soccer? I mean, what do you think is going to happen with the Canadian women's national team? What will be the tangible sort of takeaway from this World Cup? Will more money funneled into the program? I mean, have you seen and heard anything from the Canadian Federation that says there's going to be some upgrades in specific areas, whether it's training, whether it's accommodation, whatever?
I mean, I won't know too much about that until we get back into the camp environment. But, you know, I think that they're very proud of, you know, how well that we did. And obviously I would have liked to have done a little bit better. But, you know, our ultimate goal is to be leaving a legacy behind and building this program up. And I think that's what we're doing exactly. And especially we're going into an Olympic year. And I think coming off of, you know, the runs that we've had these past couple years, and we're just growing as a team. And I think, you know, now we just have to prepare for the Olympics. And if we do well there, I just keep going up.
So John Herdman, I mean, this World Cup is going to be tremendous preparation as far as pressure and everything to prepare for the Olympics in Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. We've been working really hard day in and day out. And, you know, then we came back into this NWSL environment. So we are continue working. Then we get a little bit of time off, and then we're straight back into camp and going to some tournaments. And then it's qualifiers before you know it.
Do you think there was enough tie-in with the World Cup and the NWSL? In other words, yes, we get the player connection, but was there enough done with the U.S. winning this to shine the light on the NWSL as the pro league that obviously played a big part in helping the United States win a Women's World Cup?
Oh, I mean, definitely. I mean, you see the fan pandemonium when they come back, you know, having, like, all the girls, Carly, Morgan, and Megan here, like, everyone is just, like, always cheering for them. And our first game back, I think we had 15,000 people, like, come to our game. So I think that was just absolutely incredible to see that. And, you know, our attendance has been fairly good, you know, throughout the rest of this summer. And I'm very happy with that. And I think we just need to continue to grow that and just keep getting the awareness out of women's soccer. But having the U.S. win the World Cup, I think was big. But in the World Cup in itself was such a big tournament and a big thing for women's soccer. And people were like, wow, women are here to play, you know. So they're, you know, they're really responsive to that. And, you know, they're really ready to support, you know, women's soccer. And I think it's awesome.
Not just in your times playing professionally. Have you seen the game elevate? Do you see the younger players that are coming into the league? Do they look like better players to you?
Oh, I mean, definitely. I mean, we have some quality girls that came in, you know, to Houston this summer and got a chance to play with them, and they're phenomenal, and their work ethic is great. And so it's exciting to see all the new fresh faces coming in every year, and it's going to be exciting to see the fresh faces coming in this upcoming year, and, you know, especially with an Olympic year, and just keep growing the game.
Back to the World Cup. How much pressure was on your manager, John Herdman, and how do you think he handled it?
I mean, it's hard. I mean, there's so many people looking at you like, what is he going to do with this team? Is he really turning this team around? And people don't see the behind-the-scenes things. Like, this man does so much work, you know? And I don't think sometimes it's a reflection of what he does for us and how hard he works. Is we are out there putting in everything just like they and him and the staff are putting out, doing everything that they possibly can. I think he is an absolutely phenomenal coach, and he's trying to change the face of soccer in Canada. And I think you're going to see a lot of things from him coming out. I mean, it takes a while for things to grow, and I think people just need to understand that. But if you look how far we've come under his wing, like, it's a true testament to how great of a coach he is.
Do you think the fact that Canada has been so competitive in recent times before this World Cup with the United States, that the bar was set that high that people were expecting? Now, this is Canada's going to win a World Cup, a Women's World Cup.
I mean, I think coming off the Olympics, everyone was like, wow, this is the team, like, they're going to do this. And, you know, there's a lot of expectation, but people just have to just relax and just, like, just let us do our thing and just know that we're working hard day in and day out to play the best possible soccer. And, you know, sometimes things are going to fall the way you want them to fall, and sometimes they're not. And you just got to make do with each situation. And, you know, we didn't do as well as we want to this World Cup, but, you know, the Olympics are coming up, and we're ready, and we're ready to be as competitive as possible, and so we're excited.
Lauren Sesselman, Houston Dash defender, also Canadian international, played the college game here in the United States. Actually was born here in the U.S., if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Just back now to the Dash and the NWSL. It's the fledgling league. You know, there's rumors all the time that financially there are problems. I played in professional leagues like this in the past. It's a little bit unsettling. Mm-hmm. Yet there are so many, many positives now, especially the spike in attendance here. Going from Canada and being in that environment at that level and coming back now to a league where, you know, people have to look at dollars and cents and they're really trying to control spending and the fiscal side of it, is it tough?
I mean, yes, it's definitely tough, because you just don't have a lot of those same resources, you know, that, like, we're used to as national team players. But they put so much work and effort into it, and they try to give us the most professional arena that they can. And I think Houston is one of the best clubs I've played for. I mean, they have it all together. They know exactly what they want to do. And they have a great, great staff. And I think that is the right step in the direction. And if we could just get that across the board in the NWSO, because I know maybe they lack in some other teams, then I think this league is really going to grow and into something really spectacular. I mean, there's already teams that are knocking on the door that want to come into this league, so it's just continuing to grow it. But you have to have the right resources in place for people to want to play here as well. So I think it's hard to make everybody happy no matter what, but I think they're doing a great job.
Do you and your teammates feel like you're pioneers? Are you pioneering the women's game right now?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, especially for us playing in Canada, just to see the increase in the love of women's soccer is phenomenal. And the more recognition we get wherever we go, and people are like, oh, it's soccer. You just, the fans you get everywhere like you didn't have before. And they're like, you're inspiring, you're a role model. And I think that's like the number one thing for me especially to be, is to leave that legacy and to be inspiring and to help others and the future generations get to our spot. So I'm doing everything I can off the field to help that. So,
what would you do when you're done with your playing career? Would you stay in the women's game in some capacity? Would you want to go into management? Would you want to go into teaching, mentoring? What would it be?
That's a good question. You know, I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, for me, I always want to be involved in some way. I have my own coaching camps that I do, and I've partnered with a guy up in Toronto, and he does, it's called Reaching Out as Role Models and Success Through Soccer. And I think that's just like the whole aspect of soccer is just growing as an individual while playing a sport. And I think I love doing that, but I also do all dibble dabble and all these other things. I have my own fitness company and acting and all that stuff. So I don't know. We'll see what happens, but I'm not done with soccer yet. So as I'm still playing, I'm still trying to feel out what interests me, but definitely going to be in the game at some capacity, maybe broadcasting. I don't know. We'll see.
Lauren, thank you very much for joining us on Dynamo All Access here tonight.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Lauren Sesselman. Let's hope she gets that knee healthy real soon. All right, stay with us on Dynamo All Access here on Yahoo Sports Radio, 1560 AM, because we're going to talk all things Mexican football when we come back with ESPN FC's Tom Marshall.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about a thing you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit, I gotta use it. Even if it's jazz or the quiet storm, I hook a beat up, convert it into hip-hop form. Write a rhyme and graffiti in every show you see me in. Deep concentration, cause I'm no comedian. Jokers are wild, if you wanna be tame. I treat you like a child and you're gonna be named.
Another you're enemy, listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, tonight we end it in tremendous style. Here we go down to Guadalajara, Mexico. I would say beautiful Guadalajara, Mexico, the home of many professional teams, including Atlas and Chivas. We go to our good friend Tom Marshall of ESPN FC, who does such a wonderful job of covering the Mexican League. Tom, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show. We're ending it in big style with you tonight.
No, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
All right, let's get right into it here with Tuca Ferretti now. He's going to be the Mexican coach on an interim basis. He's the coach of Tigres. We all know his reputation. He's 61 years old. He once said that he would have preferred being a street sweeper than coaching the Mexican national team, yet here he is taking a four-game gig with El Tri.
Yeah, it's a bit of a turnaround. I mean, this is a guy who you know, like you said, he said preferred to be a street sweeper, that, you know, it bores him to be the national team manager. It's the only job he would never accept. I mean, he's really been harsh in the criticism. And, you know, he's talked about the, you know, the games in the United States, the friendlies that Mexico play being just a waste of time. And he's really been one of the most vocal critics down the years of the Mexican Federation. So for him now to come in as the national team coach is... it's bizarre for those of us who have followed the game down here for quite a while. I mean, it really is a bit of a shock to the system.
Who else do you think was really in contention with this? I know Marcelo Bielsa's name was mentioned, but do you ever think Bielsa really was truly interested in taking the Mexico job?
I don't know. I mean, it's a difficult with Bielsa because, you know, they call him a loco and he is crazy. I mean, it's difficult to predict sometimes. So you're just never quite sure whether he would... even be interested. In some ways you think that he would, but and then others completely not. I think that La Volpe was definitely return of La Volpe was definitely in the works. I think Chivas owner Jorge Vergara really didn't want that to happen. I think that, you know, I know for a fact Michael Laudrup had his resume on the FMS desk and he was interested. People are talking about Juan Carlos Osorio, who New York Red Bull fans will obviously know. So yeah, I think those are the kinds of names. But it's, you know, it's gone to Tuca Ferretti, and I think the interesting thing is that he was asked if he wanted the job on a permanent basis, and actually he said no, he rejected it, and then he offered to come in as an interim. And he's actually not even getting paid for these four games, so he's kind of doing it as a favour for the federation, so that they've got a bit more time to kind of, you know, get the right person for the job, which is, it's been a bit of a difficult task. It's not been very simple.
Why would he do that, though? Because certainly, who wouldn't take Tuca Ferretti to handle your team and buy you time, like you said, if you're the Mexican Federation? Why do you think he would do that? There has to be a takeaway for Ferretti, and that could be beating the U.S. to get the team to the Confederations Cup. I got to think that he is still going to be ears if he does well in these four games. And if he does well in four games, I would have to think there's going to be a big enticement laid on the table to him by the Mexican Federation.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, I mean, he's adamant that he's, you know, he's definitely these four games, but, you know, he doesn't want the job. But obviously, the pressure is going to be absolutely huge, especially if they defeat the U.S. in style. So I think that, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how it develops. Obviously, Ferretti, you know, he's got a lot of respect down here in Mexico. He's a very good manager. And I think that, you know, he is someone that kind of deals with the media well. He's very organized on the field, his style-wise. And, yeah, I think the problem for the Federation is if he does well and then, rejects any extension, then obviously it doesn't look great from their point of view because, especially if the next person who comes in starts off, you know, not so well. And if he does badly, then it looks bad on the Federation as well. So, you know, it's a difficult one for the Federation. I mean, I don't think they're very well organized. I think that there's a new president now, Decio de Maria. But I don't think it's any different than the old guard. I think it's just basically I don't think much has changed. I think it's basically still the same Liga MX owners with influence, which a lot of people don't understand because at the end of the day, they're business people and not soccer people, which I think riles a lot of people down here. And I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of confidence down here that this federation can do the right job in picking somebody after Ferretti. And I think that with Ferretti, they're in safe hands, and there will be pressure to extend his tenure if they get that victory.
He's Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. We're talking to him live in Guadalajara, Mexico. Talk about Tuukka Ferretti. Purpose of play, stylistically, what you see with him in Tigres, and how that will connect in a bigger way with the Mexican fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's possession-based football, no doubt about it. I mean, Tigres have led the possession charts in the league for the last few years now.
But did Miguel Herrera ever get away from possession football, really? Come on, that's what makes Mexican football, right?
This is an exaggerated version.
Okay, all right. It's possession football 3.0 instead of 2.0.
Yeah. And I mean, the criticism of him his style is that the possession doesn't kind of like lead anywhere. It's almost defensive possession in terms of they keep the ball so that the other team can't obviously counter him. And you know, it's basically a 4-4-2 formation. The two central midfielders sit pretty deep. So it is kind of it's definitely not as attacking as Miguel Herrera. It's more reserved. It's more kind of, let's wait and see what the opposition do. Let's keep the ball. Let's kind of, you know, obviously circulate the ball and probe and see where the gaps open up, rather than Miguel Herrera's let's go gung-ho, let's put a lot of players in front of the ball and you know, create opportunities that way. So it is a different style. He likes balance. The key word for Tuukka Ferretti is a balanced team, and that's what he's going to look for. Unfortunately, yet again for a Mexican national team manager, he's not got a lot of time to achieve it, and that's the crux of the issue once again for Mexico with this big game against the United States coming up on October the 10th. Can he find a balance in the team? Can he select a side using a very different formation, the one Miguel Herrera was used to that functions and functions quickly?
Well, Tuukka Ferretti has been at Tigres for 5 years, still has 3 years apparently left on his contract. Remember, since 2010, Enrique Mesa, my friend Efraín Flores, José Manuel de la Torre, Chapo de la Torre, Luis Fernando Tena, Victor Manuel Vucetich, Miguel Herrera. I mean, Mexico's run through coaches, Herrera and Chapo de la Torre had the longer runs than the other aforementioned great soccer minds, by the way. So if we look at him now and what he's going to bring to this team, you've talked about it. I see something very interesting here, and that simply is sort of everybody kind of positioning themselves for what's best for them.
Yeah, eventually you'd think that something down here has to change in terms of the federation, but you know, I think I've said it before, I think the Mexican national team on the commercial side is one of the biggest national teams in the world. I think it competes with Brazil, Germany, Argentina. I mean, when you talk shirt sales and you talk ticket sales and all this kind of thing, and Twitter followers, Facebook likes, and yeah, you know, all these kind of things that are important in a way. Mexico's one of the biggest nations on the planet, but then on the field it's not, and there's a disconnect between those two issues. And to be fair, Tuukka Ferretti, in an interview with ESPN, I think yesterday, he said, you know, the one issue that I've always had with the Mexican national team is that they put the commercial side ahead of the sporting side, and that's why they've been so critical down the years of the federation. Now, it's very interesting that...
But what federation... let me just stop there. What federation isn't putting the commercial side ahead of it these days? I mean, I think the degrees are some that are better than others, but these are all money-making machines. We know that.
Yes, but I mean, you know, the Brazilian national team, if you want, could play all their games in the United States, or you know, but yeah, like you said, there's degrees of doing it, but Mexico's is extreme. I mean, the way they play, you know, the Gold Cup and the Copa America, the way they play five friendlies a year in the United States, you know, there's so many things that go on within the federation. The way that you know the commercial rights are spread, the way that the television companies down in Mexico have so much control over the national team. The way decisions are made, I mean, it's all business. And it's, you know, just take for one, just the example of who picks the national team coach. I mean, how on earth is it possible that these league owners are the ones responsible in
part for
choosing?
Yeah, that's the unique, strange thing that the owners of Mexican clubs have such a say in who's going to be the national team manager. Expand on that a little bit, Tom, because you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost a rule by committee where the 18 club owners, you know, have a vote, basically. And obviously the federation will go out and look for candidates. Individual club owners will also go out. You know, there's some active ones like the Pachuca owner, and Chivas owner will go out there and bring up names for the federation, and then in the end they all vote on it. Now, especially foreigners who come into the Mexican game just cannot understand how people who run businesses who aren't really soccer people have any say. So Sven Goran Eriksson, when he was the Mexico coach, he just couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe that he was having to explain to the Chivas owner, a businessman, why he was picking a certain goalkeeper or why he was staying at a certain hotel in Mexico City. I mean, for him, it was absolutely unbelievable. Instead of having a structure where, you know, there's actually people who've been there in charge, who know the game inside out and can kind of, you know, put together a project that's a long-term project with some kind of hard ideas to it. I mean, I think that's badly lacking in Mexico. And I think what we're seeing now, Glenn, is that because we've had Mexican youth national teams doing really well, I think we're at an absolutely crucial point now for Mexico where we really need to sort it out, because somebody's got to manage this kind of almost changing of the guard between the older players and the young ones coming through, who have done so well at youth tournaments. And I think it's absolutely crucial that they get someone in who can do that and manage it well, and be given time to do that, and in certain ways, regardless of the results.
That was part one with Tom Marshall down in Guadalajara, Mexico. Part two is coming up.
You're listening to Dynamo All Access, presented by Houston Community College. Once again from the 1560 studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show here as we continue to roll on. We finish it up tonight with part two with Tom Marshall of ESPN FC. You know, you mentioned Sven Göran Eriksson. I think that's got to be one of the worst hirings in the history of Mexican soccer. To think that he at that stage was going to be a good fit for them in Mexico, I mean, that's a bit of an indictment on the Mexican Federation, I think. Ferretti knows the players, knows the league, knows the culture. This could be good. I wouldn't be surprised if potentially, he could end up the full manager if they did well, because they'll throw a boatload of money at him. I don't think there's any question if he does well and gets him to the Confederations Cup. All right, Gio Dos Santos out in Los Angeles strikes up a wonderful partnership already with Robbie Keane. You know, it's really an organic sort of, you put two good footballers next to each other, they're going to play good football. What is some of the thought process down in Mexico of Gio Dos Santos taking the big money, coming to Major League Soccer, and playing in MLS now?
Yeah, I think people are picking up on it now, definitely. I mean, Giovanni Dos Santos, obviously one of the biggest name players down here in Mexico, and you can see on the television, you know, pundits are talking about it, the newspapers got Giovanni in there, so it's definitely had an impact. So there's obviously going to be that group that kind of resists, that think he should have stayed in Europe, that, you know, his kind of development and career would have been better off over there. But, I mean, my personal opinion on that is that those guys will never be won over, you know, no matter what he does in MLS. He can score three goals every week, and those guys will never, ever be won over. I think the only answer Gio can give those people is with the national team. And I think it's really crucial for him that with these games coming up in September against Trinidad and Argentina, and then the big playoff against the United States, I mean, I think it really will show up his critics if he can have a big impact on those games and, you know, playing for LA Galaxy and winning games for Mexico. I mean, I think that will be absolutely key if he can do that. But, you know, I think it's, from my point of view, I think it's better that Giovanni's playing, scoring goals and confident when he comes to Mexico. Obviously, it's a much shorter journey as well than on the bench for Villarreal or another European team and not getting minutes. I mean, you know, I think it's actually benefiting him right now.
Yeah, and I would throw in with that, Tom, just to add to this whole thing, I think he had so much money thrown at him, he couldn't turn it down. And the other thing is, he has an opportunity to really, I mean, just every market he goes to, he can draw. He can be such a big figure here in the United States. I don't think there's any question. This has been an unbelievable signing for Major League Soccer. Eric Cubo Torres, who's on the Houston Dynamo here, you know him so well from Chivas in your city of Guadalajara. He came out and made it pretty clear that, you know, look, MLS is faster than the Mexican League. It's a tough league. He says, quote, in Liga MX, there are players who could be walking or jogging on the pitch. You can look up and take 3, 4, even 5 seconds and nothing happens. Here you have a few seconds with the ball. They're right on you, pressuring you. Now, this quote reminded me once when I talked to the former Chivas manager, Hans Westerhoff, the Dutchman who was in Houston. And he said that every player in Mexico at a young age should be coming to MLS. Now, this was many years ago, and things have changed. Yeah. But already back then, he was identifying that, you know, the pressure that you get in MLS, the physical challenges that you have, are essential to combine with the technique and the skill of the Mexican player. So here's Cubo Torres talking about it as well. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's right. I think obviously, there is a difference in the game, and obviously the Mexican game has always been very, very technical, and less on the physical side. So I think that I think it's not just with MLS. I think that you can pinpoint that very reason for why Mexicans haven't had that much success in Europe. I mean, I think Miguel Layún debuted in the Premier League a couple of weeks ago, and he was the ninth Mexican to make his debut. I think out of those nine, so far we can only say one has had any degree of success, which is Javier Hernández. And why is that? I think it's the same reason that Hugo Torres is hitting on there. It's faster, it's physical, you don't get much time, and you don't get time to use your technique. You know what I mean? So I think Mexicans are struggling, and I think that's the argument for Mexicans, more Mexicans going abroad, I mean, from my perspective anyway. So, yeah, and the other thing, Cubo did get a bit of criticism during the week in an interview, I think, with Univision from Chepo de la Torre. He criticised his training a bit, which was interesting. So I don't know if it was that slightly had something slightly to do with that or not. I doubt it, but always a possibility.
Yeah, and listen, many a good foreign international player has struggled in MLS to catch up to the sort of pace and rhythm and of games here. This is not something I really want to get into a lot, but Cubo Torres' case against him, because you're in Guadalajara, is that still open? Because that's what I've been reading, that it's still open. This case, it dates back to April.
I believe so, but I mean, the way the Mexican kind of legal system works, it's not the quickest. And, these things do take time to work out, and obviously the lawyers will be going back and forth. So, you know, I think we'll have to see how it's resolved. Obviously, it's a difficult situation, but, you know, to be honest, in the press down here, there's not been a lot about it at all since he moved up there to Houston. So, I don't think there's anything new to kind of report apart from, obviously, you know, we're still waiting to see what the final outcome is.
Yeah, I've had an opportunity to interview him a number of times, and he's been excellent. I think he's been excellent. He's attempted English. I love the fact that he's such a simplistic player. He's outside of the box. It's 1-2 touch, combine with a midfielder and get into the penalty area where the ball's ultimately going to be. I love that simplicity about his game. I think he's got a great ability to hold play up as well, but he's yet to make his debut in a starting way for the Houston Dynamo yet. Miguel Herrera, tell me where he's going to end up in Liga MX and what's going on with Miguel, because I know he's going to end up getting a job probably by the same guys that fired him from the national team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Club America, obviously, he won a title and reached a final with them. Obviously, he's got a strong link there. But at the minute, Nacho Ambriz is doing very well with America. I think they're in second place. I think they're absolutely destroying teams over the last 3 weeks. They've won quite comfortably. But I tell you what, Glenn, I'll just throw something out there. I'd love to see Miguel Herrera try his hand in MLS.
Yeah,
I think
me too.
Just be absolutely sensational.
Me too. I think that's a great call. I think he'd be unbelievable now. The question is where and who, because there's very few, there's limited foreign managers in this league. I mean, we have one in Owen Coyle here in Houston who's really adapted very well. Now, would his personality adapt to this league? Because there's a whole bunch of red tape when it comes to how you acquire players and classification of players. Would he be able to handle that? Would he be patient enough to handle that? Because we all know he's got a temper problem.
Yeah, but I think that Miguel Herrera is the type of coach where he'd leave that kind of stuff to kind of a general manager. And obviously he'd have his opinions on who to bring in, but I think Miguel Herrera just loves coaching and he loves being with the players. He's almost like one of the boys. He's definitely like that kind of manager who doesn't kind of separate himself from the squad. So, you know, I think he could do a good job. I think he's a very good manager. I mean, and I think it'd benefit his career so much after this national team because, you know, after leaving Club America and winning the championship there and then going to the national team, it's like, I don't see how his career can really advance. So, I mean, I'd love to see him try it up there. I think there's so few Mexican managers that try to do anything outside of Mexico. And I think, you know, I really do think the domestic game suffers for that. And look, how much money have MLS put into Giovanni Dos Santos? And I think it's worth it, don't get me wrong.
Well, listen, Herrera would draw. Yeah, he would
imagine
be.
Imagine Herrera.
Yeah, he'd be a draw, Tom. He'd be a draw, okay? Not only do you get a manager, but you're going to get a guy who puts people in the seats as well. Has he been in public? Has he said anything lately? Has he been out there publicly saying anything?
Yeah, he's been doing some interviews. I mean, obviously, he really regrets what he did in like throwing a punch at a TV commentator in the airport. I should really laugh, but I mean, it's just such a bizarre way to get fired from the job. Yeah, he said he's taking a bit of time off, but you know, he's going to come back to the game. He wants to coach again soon, and he's going to come back better than he was.
Yeah, and somebody
really well with the experience behind him.
Yeah, and he's hanging on the periphery, him and his agent, and somebody's going to struggle with the team in the Mexican League, and he's going to get offers. I don't think there's any question. Jesus Corona, who had a very, very good Gold Cup. I like this player a lot. His agent now is putting out there that Porto's interested in him. There's nothing here that I would think that would make me think that this isn't true. Do you think it's a potential that he ends up there?
Yeah, I think so.
And
yeah,
would
I
mean, that be a good move for him? Would that be a good move for him?
Yeah, I think Quaresma, the winger, I think he's left now. I think he's gone to Turkey, if I'm not mistaken. So I think there's an opportunity there for somebody to come in. I think Tecatito Corona is, you know, he's really come on a lot in the last couple of years. I mean, even when he was back in Mexico, he was, you know, people had him marked as a really big talent. And I think he's got a massive future in both the national team and in Europe. I mean, it's his rate of development more than anything and his maturity that he's showing. I think he's exciting people down here and obviously in Europe as well. And I think the Porto would be a great club for him to continue that development and alongside another Mexican named Hector Herrera, so which would be an excellent link for him. So yeah, I think Tecatito, there's a lot of hype around Mexican players, especially in Mexico, but I think Tecatito's one that's kind of been a bit quiet. He's gone to a small club in 20 in Holland and he's just been kind of working hard without the pressure, without the spotlight of the Mexican press, and I think he's benefited greatly from that.
And Twente has got some financial problems. Portuguese newspaper saying that Porto potentially could pay up to $10 million for this 22-year-old. He's young. You mentioned Hector Herrera playing at Porto, Raul Jimenez at Benfica. There's a couple other Mexican players in the league. Listen, Tom, as always, tremendously well-informed. You're such a great guest for the show, and I thank you so much, as always, for coming on the program.
No problem, Glenn. Yeah, I always enjoy talking Talking Tucker, nothing bad.
Give us your Twitter handle as usual, because I put it out there tonight, but give us your Twitter handle.
Yep, it's at Mexico World Cup.
He's Tom Marshall, ESPN FC. He's been a wonderful guest for the show. Tom, we look forward to talking to you soon, and continue to have a great time down in Guadalajara.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. You too.
All right, that's Tom Marshall. We'll wrap it up here tonight. Quick reminder here, it's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook, Soccer Matters. That's where you get all the podcasts. Don't forget, each and every week, you can head over to HoustonDynamo.com for your tickets. Also, Argentina-Bolivia tickets. They are going fast. You want to be at this game. This is a memorable, historic moment for soccer in the city of Houston, Texas. Go to BBVACompassStadium.com. Get your tickets for Argentina and Bolivia. My thanks, as always, for you listening in here tonight. For producer Michael Carroll and Adam Sager, I'm Glenn Davis. We will see you down at BBVA Compass Stadium.